Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and I'm joined by, who we affectionately call the Professor of Football, a very knowledgeable, but also a very witty, Zach Meckler. Zach, what's going on?
Nothing too much. It's a beautiful day in Pittsburgh for once, so, you know, I'm trying to enjoy that to the best of my abilities while this world still devolves into chaos and madness, so...
Hey, in Ohio, we're getting some stuff open. We may even have pools by Memorial Day. We'll see. And, you know, I know some people freak out about that, but it's like, you know, I guess you'll hedge your bets and see how everything else is going. And I don't want to give anyone any advice because I don't know. I read so many things about this virus that it's so hard to believe whatever. It's just I tend to think the chlorine in the pool might be okay. But if there's like a zillion people, see, we have a pool as part of this private complex that I'm in, and it wouldn't have been open by now anyways. It was barely open for Memorial Day because they got to do inspections and all these other things on it too. So it'll be interesting to see if they open the private pool here. I have no idea what they're going to do. It'll put a major crimp on, you know, like my six-year-old daughter loves to swim. It'll put a crimp on her summer plans, spring break, summer break, or whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing what's going to happen. But they're slowly easing up some things here, and I don't know if it'll be life as normal. But hey, you know what? I'll take it. We're getting mid-May, end of May, trying to do the new normal thing. And hopefully over in Pennsylvania, particularly interested in Western Pennsylvania, we'll see how things go. As the NFL said that their complexes and everything else like that are still not open. But hey, maybe we'll get there. You know, these OTAs and things like that would be going on just about this time anyway. So if it's delayed a week or two, you know, the only thing it's really doing is kind of talking about putting a crimp on anybody. It's putting a crimp on the free time of the players. They're going to get that paid a little more forward than usual before maybe hopefully reporting for the Steelers in their case to St. Vincent College and then seeing if we have a training camp.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be nice to see how that all pans out. It seems like we're all just kind of sitting here in limbo waiting for who knows what, you know. I mean, you see all the reports, how there's multiple things that are on the table of how they're going to approach this summer and approach this upcoming season, not just with football, but, you know, with all the major North American sports, you know. So it's a matter of just seeing how it's all going to play out. I'm not pretending like I have any idea. I'm just hoping there is some caliber of season, you know, whether there's fans in the seats, whether there's not fans in the seats, whether there's limited fans in the seats. I'm not really as concerned about that as long as, you know, we get to enjoy some level of sports. You know, I just want to see some action, whether it's reduced, whether it's, you know, completely altered for this year, whatever that may be. I'm just looking forward to actually having some action there. So all this speculation and just nonsense stuff you see online can all be put aside, and we can actually have some real concrete evidence of what the season's going to be like.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And you know what? Fans in the stands, I want to be there, man. I was talking to Brian about this. You may not have caught it on the last episode, but you know, when it's cold weather, I have the baklava anyways. I get the face mask thing going. So wearing a face mask isn't going to put like a major crimp on my own personal style or enjoyment of the game. But hey, we'll see what's going on. You know, I'm not going to be the one that pretends that everyone practices the greatest of hygiene at these things. In fact, we were just talking about the Steelers Nation Unite presale on the tickets. And if you're up in the bleachers, good luck. There's no social distancing up there. The upper end zone opposite of the scoreboard, if you ever go to Heinz Field or if you've ever been, folks, those are the worst seats in pretty much any stadium I've been in a long time. It's like sitting in a high school football field, except everything looks like ants from where you're at. Now, granted, I still love being at Steelers games. I still love the atmosphere. I say there's usually not a bad seat in the house, but when you're dealing with that, it's a whole different ball game. You don't have your own 18 inches, you know, kind of sectioned off for yourself that you paid for. You're cramming in with sometimes some very large people, people who shift and sit wherever the heck they feel like it. Somebody with the giant bucket of the Quaker Steak and Lube wings, the super whatever they call it. And then, you know, and then on top of it, it's going to be a flavor I don't like. It's going to be like some hot buffalo thing that's going to flare up my nostrils, and they're trying to hold a beer. Although I will say they have replaced the cup holders there. Like last year, the year before, this is a side story for people too, as you try and walk in and you have like a seat in the middle of the row, I totally crushed someone's beer right off of one of those old cup holders. They used to sit on a tilt where you had to drink like a third of it, right?
Yeah.
Is to make sure it didn't spill, even if you just put it in the cup holder. And granted, I'm not buying a whole lot of, you know, $8 to $10 stadium beers to begin with. That's what tailgating's for. But I felt so bad. I just had to hand the lady a 10. It was like right at kickoff, too. It was a primetime game, like a Sunday night or Monday night game. I felt terrible about it. But, you know, I'm a large guy myself. What am I supposed to do? So you're trying to get through, and people – and she didn't stand up. You know what? So a little bit in my defense, I'm not just some big clumsy mongoloid over here. She didn't stand up. She did one of those like little shimmies where you barely like tuck your knees in and you're like trying to get through about a 6-inch space between the other row that's in front of you, and wham, there goes the beer because of the crappy cup holders to begin with. And they pour everything. It's weird because I want to say this is probably due to the Cleveland Browns, and you may or may not remember this, Zach, since you're a little younger than I am, but do you remember when they threw all the bottles on the field at the referees?
Oh, yeah.
So now they pour all the beer. This doesn't even have to be a draft beer. If you buy something and it comes in like a pint can, or it's obviously they're not going to give you a glass bottle anywhere anymore, but they won't even give you the cans. They'll pour it into a cup, and then you have this plastic cup that you have to hope somebody else doesn't sneeze in. You got to hope it doesn't rain or snow. Somebody's trying to sneak a cigarette and the ashes fly in it, or any other type of crap that could go on. So you almost have to do like the Hangover movies and put the napkin over the top of it so nobody roofies you and screws up your beer, right? But anyways, I don't know how I got – oh, we got onto the social distancing thing. That alone, that made me think of like the germy thing. Aside from the bat, now the restrooms, most of them always have had hand sanitizer. Obviously, you have the sinks and everything like that. But the way those get packed in, you're elbow to elbow people, and as men, we just look straight forward, right? Because they're like the troughs that are sitting there when you have to use the facilities. Although they have replaced some of that last year too. I don't think they replaced it everywhere, but they started to put in, you know, the actual it was kind of dumb because they put in actual urinals, and then all of a sudden you've reduced the capacity, you know what I mean? And there's always guys that are like, hey, I can fit right in there, scoot over a little bit, and it's just that's going to work real well with the coronavirus. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But
I try to stay away from those things to begin with. Those troughs just are festering grounds, and you got the drunk guy next to you that's stumbling over. Just it's too much for me. And the whole trough concept is, you know, I get why it's there. It's easy. It's efficient and whatnot. But, I mean, come on now. It gets weird. You get in the fourth quarter of a Steelers-Ravens game. You got Ravens fans in there, Steelers fans in there. They're all drunk. They're all trying to get their business done, and it just turns into an absolute disaster. So I try to avoid that and try to go at more down times whenever you don't have 50 people trying to squeeze into a, you know, a 10-foot little line or what do you want to call it. So it's quite the experience, to say the least.
And the drunk yinzer that doesn't have the best of aim, or you know, you're trying to listen to part of the game over the radio. I love the hearing the radio broadcast though, like inside the stadium. It's that's really cool, and they've installed TVs over the years too, so you can catch some of it if you're in the concession line. You don't miss, but you're still missing because you know what? When you see a big play and you're stuck like trying to get like a hot chocolate or something, you know. And you're looking and you're like, you hear everything out in the stadium, which is like cavernous, and all the noise is kind of, you know, bounces off itself in that bowl. And you're just in this like concrete whatever. It still has a lot more charm and personality than anything with the Cincinnati Bengals stadium, which is just, man, that's like being in the parking deck. It has about the same kind of personality. Paul Brown, terrible stadium. But anyways, we have some other things to talk about. Actually, it's funny we brought up the Browns because so did James Harrison in an indirect way. He is in the news again, and I always wonder, it's like, did he say these things to get your clicks and views up? And here we are talking about it, obviously, but we're going to put some common sense behind this, because everyone immediately took to Bounty Gate 2 when it comes to this. James Harrison was on, let me see, I want to make sure I get this right. This was the Going Deep podcast on Barstool Sports, and that was just like 24 hours ago, basically, from where we are right now on a Friday afternoon. And James Harrison, he's talking about all kinds of different things, but he talked about there's a clip, by the way. I think I'm going to include this link in with our show notes, but if you find it, it's on TMZ. You'll have to watch a 30-second ad to watch a 56-second clip. I wish I could play it here, but due to copyright and things like that, I'm just going to stay away. You'll have to seek it out. But he did say something about he was talking about a $75,000 fine that he had gotten, and he said that it was against Muhammad Massaqua, the Cleveland Browns. Totally, if you've ever seen the play, it looked like he killed him. He said he only went about 50% or half speed, or hit him about half as hard. He was trying to get the ball loose. Go figure, a guy that of his pedigree, right, trying to get the ball free. That would never happen, right? So at this point, though, this is the 2010 season. And James Harrison is already an NFL Defensive Player of the Year back in 2008. He's already gotten two Super Bowl rings, and he's already been to, I want to say, three Pro Bowls. Let's see if I could find out if it's four by this point in time. Just trying to give you a little frame of reference of what's going on with the comments, because a lot of people wanted to make it sound like he goes and says, he kind of dovetailed from talking about the hit and talking about the fine all of a sudden to saying, hey, the G-est thing, probably the most gangster thing for people who have no clue what he's talking about. The G-est thing, though, that Mike Tomlin ever did, he said he handed him an envelope. And then all of a sudden it went from that statement went to Mike Tomlin's paying players for being dirty and giving hits. He didn't even say that, like, did he say he handed the envelope like right after the game, like during the game or after the game or anything like that? No, that's the most ridiculous thing. And I got to give, I think it was it David Todd went out and said something too, tweeted it. And he says, let me get it. I don't want to screw it up yet. Let me get the exact quote here, but you're just trying to picture all of this in your head. You're trying to frame like the period of time. James Harrison is still pretty much in his prime. And he goes and says this, and it's like, he's never said anything about it before, right? And he hasn't been playing football for several years, but he always seems to come up with something that ends up just kind of being controversial or getting somebody's attention. So the one thing you got to look at here is the frame of reference, I guess, of what he's saying. And he already came out in Mike Tomlin's defense. He isn't going out there. I think a lot of people are still holding on to when he left. He's already been back to Heinz Field to celebrate one of the Super Bowl wins, for cripe's sake. You know what I mean? I don't think he necessarily holds a ton of animosity against the Steelers organization, as some people would like to make it believe, but he's already ruffled some feathers with this comment. And as I continue to seek for this, God, I swear I had retweeted this. I can't find it, Zach, but I am going to find this, and then I'm going to say what David Todd said so I don't steal his great quote here, because it was pretty amazing. Not for nothing, but you can't put $75,000 cash in an envelope. I mean, any envelope you could picture. Think about $75,000, even if it were in $100 bills. You're not fitting that kind of money. I don't even know if that would fit in a briefcase like you see in the movies.
No, and like that's just, unless you know he just had a blank check ready to go and it was just in that tiny. Like I don't know. The entire thing is just, it's weird to me, because like he never said. I mean, the motive for even bringing something like that up, or even mentioning that, and not mentioning what's in the envelope, is wild to me. But then the fact that nothing was really alluded to, and all of a sudden, you know, I constitute a lot of it to being how deprived of actual news we are right now, and we're looking to kick whatever dots we can get, and somehow, you know, it starts connecting the dot, the Bounty Gate with the Saints, and all of a sudden we're going to say it's the same exact thing as that, when it's a little blurb, a little tiny tidbit that's not going to get any type of credence any other time, nine times out of ten, and then here we are sitting there trying to make, you know, I'm picturing Tomlin as like this Bond villain, like you said, with a briefcase, and he slides it across the table after the fact. He calls Harrison into his office, and he slides it across and just opens it up, and all of a sudden this light just reflects out of the briefcase as the lights dim around Harrison, and you see Tomlin start stroking his beard very maniacally, and come on.
He's wearing a monocle. He has a cat. Yeah, he has a cat in his lap.
That's all I picture when we're reading this stuff, because that's just where we're at trying to, you know, point these things together. And I do give credit to the fact that it got nipped in the butt, but come on.
Yeah, it is pretty dumb. I love it. A Bond villain. And it's just, I was thinking of something in my head. I don't know that I want to dovetail into it, but there was a SpongeBob episode. I was out of town. I was in a cabin for a few days. It was great. Got to relax with the wife. It was 10th wedding anniversary, by the way, if anybody was that curious as to what we were doing. And obviously, we were social distancing because, hello, it's a cabin in the middle of the woods and nowhere. So... But we had like satellite TV, Nickelodeon's on, the kids watching SpongeBob, and that's what they were doing. They were like playing like heroes and villains, and they had SpongeBob and Patrick on this fryer, and Squidward was something or whatever. And I thought we were supposed to be pretending, and he goes, Squidward, as the villain, goes, "No, Mr. Bob, I want to see you fry," instead of "No, Mr. Bond, I want to see you die," which was pretty funny. It was hilarious. I love all the inside humor on that. And I picture like something very similar here with alluding to Mike Tomlin being a gangster. Now, let's talk about this. Mike Tomlin has been the head coach of the Steelers for how long at this point? This is his fourth season. He's already taken this team to and won a Super Bowl. He will take them to the Super Bowl in this same season. This game, I was trying to figure out which week this was played in, because they played twice. Was it the October 17th game? It would have been at home, so I do believe it was October 17th. It was week 6 following a bye. And... you know, I'm trying to frame all this. I was at this game, actually. This was when Big Ben came back, because he was suspended for 4 weeks to start the season. They wore the 75th anniversary jerseys. That's absolutely right. I remember this. Obviously, for those of you who are longtime listeners, my wife is a Browns fan, and we had picked this game to go to. It was just like 2 weeks ahead of my birthday, so it was like a birthday present at that time. And, man, it totally escaped me that I was at this game. I do remember the hit, and I've seen the replays and everything so many times. But, yeah, this is where the Browns fans start to come out of the woodwork, and like the Bengals fans and everybody else, the Steelers are always a dirty team and everything like that. And it was just one of those things that happens on the field. Of course, a couple years later, I think it was 2012 maybe, was when Harrison knocked out Colt McCoy too, which was what I thought one of the weaker hits when he went to take off as a runner, and everybody still points to that and how he's such a bad guy and everything. Look, James Harrison, I think, marches to the beat of his own drum. He's going to do what James Harrison wants to do. We pretty much have seen that, because he talked his way out of Pittsburgh in order to try and win a Super Bowl with the Patriots, went and signed there, and he was unhappy, you know, at the very tail end of his career. But he also retired. He came back. You know, he wasn't happy about his exit, went and played like a year with the Bengals, if you even call it that. Then he was retired, but he still came back to the team, signed a contract to retire as a Steeler. Okay, so this is just kind of painting where James Harrison goes here. And of course, yeah, Sports Illustrated interview with Roger Goodell, all these other crazy things that, you know, the stories and stuff. He still goes on hunting trips with Ben Roethlisberger and everybody. It's just a menacing looking guy. I can't, like, seeing him in like the real tree stuff or whatever, you know what I mean? Like the camo, like the wood camo and the hunting gear. Jeez, oh man, I don't know, man. It would be a bad horror movie if I saw that guy in the woods, especially like bow and arrow or something, like Rambo style. But he leaves and goes to the Patriots. He still goes on these hunting trips. He's still been back to Heinz Field. Everyone always wants to take every word that he says is, you know, creating some sort of conflict. And I think it's very telling that he comes out. It was almost like he was complimenting Mike Tomlin in a way by even calling him a G, you know what I mean? Giving him some street cred as being like cool or hip or taking care of something for a player who feels, and he rightfully feels, when I don't want to say rightfully, because some people are going to be like, meh, 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 but it wasn't penalized on the field. He defends himself as it being a dirty play whatsoever and being fine. Somebody else takes care of this fine, and I just don't know. you know, with a guy who's already won an MVP and a couple of rings, and you're playing on this team that feels that maybe they were already a 3-1 at this point without Ben. You get Ben back. You had a whole week off to prepare extra for a home game against the Browns. And you just, you know, it's not like he's going out there and trying to intentionally kill people. I also don't think, being the fourth year that Mike Tomlin is a head coach, that there's any type of bounty system or anything like this. I put this in the same frame of reference as we've seen fans do GoFundMes to pay for player fines. We've heard different things about other players covering financially the fine or chipping in for somebody else. I would even put this in the same category as Ben taking his offensive line out to like a buffet and getting those guys fed and paying for their dinner. I think even if there was $75,000 stuffed into an envelope somewhere, who cares? This is such a non-story to me. I think that's really, really where we need to put our foot down. Is it any type of story to you, Zach? Does it just sound preposterous like I'm framing it?
No, when I saw this pop up there, I looked at my phone. I was like, oh, okay. And I just kept on scrolling through. I'm like, I'm not giving this any credence. Like, I saw it, you know, it popped up, and I'm not going to just ignore it because it is, you know, a thing that pops up on your feed. You read it because you want to see what actually was said because of how things get misconstrued in the media. But when I was listening to this, you know, as much as fans, you know, from other fan bases want to go and sit there and say, oh, it's the Steelers just being dirty again. They cover up everything, blah, blah, blah. Whether you want to face it or not, even though it is frowned upon, albeit even illegal, if I'm not mistaken, for coaches and teams to pay for players' fines, you see it happen all the time anyway, because where the money comes from can't be traced when it comes to that stuff. Players pitch in, coaches pitch in. If it's really egregious, like I remember the Rooneys being very upset with the Massaqua fine when it was all said and done. Yeah. You know, there's going to be money that comes out of here, especially when it's a, you know, player, you know, not of James Harrison's caliber, a lesser tier player that doesn't make that kind of caliber. You know, some of these players get a $50,000 fine for something like that. That's a game check or more, depending on what level they're at on the team. You know, and if they think it's really egregious, players will pitch in, team will pitch in, coaches will pitch in, whatever. That's just the reality of the sports world. You know, it's not just the Steelers that are breaking the rules and bending the rules and getting away with anything, and they're so dirty. That's one of the biggest arguments I have with every fan base, a little deviant here. Every fan base thinks every other their team is, you know, up on this pedestal. And every other
Angels, Saints. One,
yeah, and every other team is this dirtbag organization with dirtbag fans, and you know they're kissing their cousins and what. Like that's, I see that all the time from every fan base in every sport. Every team is the same when it comes to that type of stuff. Every team has that brotherhood, or at least tries to have that brotherhood. And you know, you're all going to look out for each other. This is no different than that. I think this was another case of just what he said getting taken with and ran with, and just seeing as far as you could carry it. And as far as they could carry it lasted one day, you know. So that's if we were in the midst of, you know, OTAs and mini camp and looking forward to training camp starting in a little while, you know, I don't think this would be as big of an issue as it is right now. I think it's the fact that we're such a standstill of news, you know, because virtual off seasons can only get so exciting at this point in time. You know, virtual mini camp, what are you going to take away from that? Player interviews where they pretty much say also the same thing. I mean, no offense to any of the rookies, but virtual minicamp. Oh, I learned the playbook. Oh, you know, I talked to the coaches. Oh, player X, Y, and Z who are veterans on the team have been texted. Like, that's every rookie is saying that right now. There's nothing exciting going on. So whenever a guy like James Harrison, who has, you know, he has had a reputation in the league for being a quote-unquote dirty player with some of the hits he laid out. And if he wasn't in Pittsburgh, most teams hated James Harrison. That's just the reality of it. You know, and that's typically comes with a player of his stature and his reputation of being a hard-nosed, physical player that's going to look to lay blows all the time. He opens his mouth up a lot, whether you like it or not, good or bad. He does say a lot of things in the media, particularly about the team. When he was there, after he was there, whether it be about Coach Tomlin, his teammates, his experiences, wherever, he talks about this stuff pretty freely. He opens his mouth again, and this, I think, of all the things he said, is probably the most minuscule that I didn't even register as being anything more than just a guy in a podcast or a radio interview or whatever, just talking, you know, just spewing out stuff, just coming, you know, off the cusp. I don't think this was ever meant to be egregious. I don't think it was ever meant to be a personal attack that potentially jeopardized Tomlin as being, you know, Bounty Gate 2.0. It was just James Harrison talking. I'm not giving this any type of newsworthy ability to the point where it's getting picked up by people all across the media for clicks and retweets and, you know, views. It's just another one of those things as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and depending on where you hear some of these things from, Mohamed Massaquah was a wide receiver, not a quarterback. So get your fines straight. And yeah, this was it was a higher fine. It was eventually reduced to $50,000 because well, it was that high at 75 because he was a considered repeat offender. I never put Harrison in the same category as Avontaze Burfict. He was making plays. Yeah, he's making plays on guys on the ball. You have Burfict running around and he hits people that aren't even, you know, in a play. You have somebody that just kind of runs like a little decoy route off to the side and the play goes to the other side of the field and then he's running full force helmet hitting someone like Max Williams. I mean, come on. So people try to put this in the same kind of category, but you know, boy, where do I go here? Because we got people who denied it, and then we got people speaking. I guess since we brought up, you know, everybody thinking their team is Angels and Saints, Sean Payton saying, you know, crying over spilled milk already, too, about their own bounty gate and him being suspended and losing $6 million for a season. And he's like, well, I'm never going to let it go and this and that. And, you know, I get it. He's only going to know what goes on in his own locker room. But the fact of the matter is that they said, hey, if you do X, you'll receive Y. You can't do that. And that's not what's going on here after the fact. Now, you have Harrison's agent saying it didn't happen. You have Art Rooney, too, saying nothing like that ever happened. It's, you know, Rooney says, I'm very certain nothing like this ever happened. I have no idea why James would make a comment like this, but there is simply no basis for believing anything like this. Now, Bill Parise, his advisor, and former agent, now he told Pittsburgh Tribune Review that it never happened. He says, absolutely not. Never happened. I would have known that. It didn't happen. James and I are still together. We're really close during our 18 years. He would have said something along the way. And, of course, the NFL doesn't have any comment. And, you know, Sean Payton or the Saints organization is going to continue to say whatever they're going to say because, you know, we always think that everyone's biased against the Steelers. Oh, well, they made the Ravens schedule easier. I'm so sick of seeing that on the internet already. If you didn't realize, the Steelers were actually ranked second as when it comes to strength of schedule. And as we said when we did the schedule podcast, was that already like a week ago or 2 weeks ago? Jeez, I would lose track of time. Yeah, I mean, we were talking about it. It's like you already know the schedule. Like you can know next year's schedule for the most part. It just depends. The rest of it depends on placement, only like one or two or three games or whatever. So if you win your division, you're going to play the other teams that won the division last season, and et cetera, et cetera. And people are going to assign whatever values based on coaching changes, staff changes, player changes, and movement and things of that nature. And it's just, I don't know. I think some people just like, they like to get riled up about James Harrison. They like to get riled up about Mike Tomlin. And here you go. You have all these other people saying whatever. We'll probably never hear from Mike Tomlin about it whatsoever. No. If the NFL investigates or whatever, the people are trying to say, well, if it's the Patriots, you know, we're talking about, you know, this stuff now. If it were the Patriots, they would have already lost a draft pick or anything of that nature. And it's just the Saints seem to be a team. If there's anybody who's probably been wronged by the NFL or had some things where their fan base can, like, legitimately complain, or I was going to cuss for a second, but you know what I was going to say. It's probably them. They've had this pass interference thing go wrong on them a few times. But then when you look at it from the Steelers' perspective, it's like, well, hey, the Steelers would have probably been in the playoffs if not for this crap call with Joe Hayden and Alvin Kamara where there was like no contact. So, you know, it goes around, comes around, I guess. And I guess we'll see how that's going to work now too, whether or not, you know, with not being able to challenge it. And I guess they didn't really care for the experiment overall. But anyways, as we move around and look at some of this stuff, there's a lot of other things that were going on at that same time, too, as far as the Steelers organization. I already kind of alluded to it. Ben Roethlisberger was suspended their first four games. They tried to roll out Dennis Dixon to begin this whole thing. And then you also have Santonio Holmes. He was shipped out of town at the same time, too, in a trade during the offseason. So it was kind of like a turbulent time for the Steelers. You had a season removed from winning the Super Bowl in 08, where they didn't make the playoffs. They finished at 9-7. And they had a lot of things to prove at that time. And one of those things to prove, too, is, like we were saying, you know, whether or not you believe this is really a dirty hit, you're just 4 weeks into the season, 5 weeks with the bye, you're playing your fifth game, you're getting to play at home. So, you know, are you really going out there? Are you really having some type of bounty system to turn this thing around? I really don't think so. They were already under enough of a microscope. I want to say, too, perhaps I don't know if the Hines Ward thing with the DUI and that was around that same time or not, but you know, that's something else over a timeline you could probably look at. I could figure that out. You have this Steelers team that's trying to claw and bite and remain relevant without their leader, without their quarterback for those first 4 weeks. And then you get into this, you play the Browns. I don't think there's a whole lot that goes into this. They already had to deal with all of the Roethlisberger investigation and scrutiny and everything like that leading up to this, and originally however many games they were going to suspend him, and I don't know, I think it was reduced only to those four. Do you really think that Mike Tomlin and his staff or anybody else in that organization is going to have a bounty scheme going on simultaneously? That's the number one thing that really sets the bells and whistles off for me as to this being complete crap. The other thing I said, too, is like, what kind of person do you feel James Harrison is at this time? He still gets selected to be an All-Pro. He's 32 years old at some point during this 2010 season. And I understand he's only going to have two more years in Pittsburgh before going to Cincinnati, semi-retiring, and then coming out and playing another 3-4 seasons in the NFL. He's already been detached from that. I think some of the stories that you hear is no different than when Ike Taylor comes on here. They almost talk very similarly, by the way. It's kind of weird hearing Harrison on these interviews. I think Harrison's doing some things that are good for his media career to draw some attention to him. Obviously, it's going to draw attention to Barstool. It's going to draw attention to TMZ. ESPN's going to blow it up because they need people to look there. You think they're bleeding money right now? So we talk a lot about clickbait and setting fire to things and stories and making a mountain out of a molehill that really isn't there. But I also think it's kind of telling that the reason you hear a lot of things with James Harrison and Mike Tomlin isn't necessarily that it's the more recent history and Tomlin's still there. James Harrison wasn't really a starter under the previous regime with Bill Cowher as the head coach. Sure, he was there, but how many times did he get cut when Bill Cowher was in control of the team right there? He had a handful of starts here or there. He appears in a few games here or there. He wasn't quite over the course of the four seasons that he was with the Steelers and Bill Cowher was a coach. He had a total of 4 sacks. Comes in 2007, starts to become a full-time starter, 8.5. Then all of a sudden he has the monstrous 16-sack season. The Steelers win the Super Bowl. He becomes a defensive MVP, et cetera, et cetera. So you place all of this into perspective, and it's just kind of like, he's been there for so long, he doesn't usually have any stories about Cowher or anything like that. He only has the stories from when pretty much he was riding the peak of his career.
Yeah, and again, you know, James Harrison's story, and as far as I'm concerned, his lore in Pittsburgh will always be one that should be, you know, highly regarded. You know, I'm not going to put him in the same category as a historic player as if, you know, a Troy Polamalu or, you know, any player like that. But you look at that the Tomlin era, you can't deny that James Harrison, you know, deserves to be in conversation as, you know, the best pass rusher that the Steelers had for that window, you know, until we see what T.J. Watt ultimately ends up doing with his career. But just the story of Harrison, you know, how he was really an unknown prospect out of Kent State, was really a nobody until he, you know, kind of shot on the spotlight in 2007-2008. And his relationship with Tomlin, you know, Tomlin was the person that put him in that position. They felt good enough to move away from a guy like Joey Porter, who, you know, was a Pro Bowl caliber linebacker for the Steelers. And, you know, obviously James Harrison went on to do everything that he did with the team, Defensive Player of the Year, all those sacks. I mean, he had, what, 3 seasons in a row where he reached double-digit sacks, you know, bookended by almost other double-digit sack seasons. So, you know, he did everything you'd want him to, and he's a very, you know, outspoken, talented-as-it-is guy. He was when he was in Pittsburgh. You know, he comes off as quiet, but when he opens his mouth, people tend to listen. Because, you know, he tells it as it is, and he always is told it as it is, whether you like it or don't like it. I think most people that don't like it typically are Pittsburgh fans that feel as though, you know, he owes something to the team for making him as he is. And that I get where that mindset comes from. At the same time, you know, if he's trying to get a career early media, because he's on those networks all the time, he's on NFL Network, he's on ESPN, mm-hmm. he's on there on Fox, you know, giving opinions as a guest on there and doing his thing, and he's going to, you know, make comments and things like that. And, you know, how much of it stems from this reportedly volatile relationship he had with Tomlin, I don't know. But at the same time, guys are going to say what they want to say. A lot of these players, especially in today's age, the whole loyalty to a team, or however you want to phrase it, isn't the same as it used to be. You know, guys from the 70s and the 80s, not whatever generation of football they want to, will come out and they'll have things they liked, didn't like, and some will be more vocal about the teams that they played on. And that's just the reality of sports. You know, I think a lot of fans like to paint every player as, you know, this team gave you a chance, and from the outside, everything's perfect. And if anything bugs you, then screw you, because you're in the wrong, because the team is above the player, whatever. You know, no organization at any level of football works that smoothly, especially when you look at a team sport like football, where you have, you know, in the NFL, 53 guys plus practice squad, plus all the support personnel and coaches. And there's so many wheels that involved in this process, so many gears that are working towards one goal. Even you look at college sports, where you have some rosters over 100 people. That's a lot at any level, a lot of personalities working together to get to the goal you're trying to go to. So it's not going to be all perfect all the time. And to look at this one little instant here with James Harrison laying out what I don't even consider to be a massive hit. You go back and watch that hit. I think it's just the result of James Harrison and Mahomet Masquel coming in different directions. When James Harrison said he put 50% or whatever into that hit, just trying to jar the ball loose, I believe that, because we've seen James Harrison level people to the point where he's looking to, you know, lay a devastating hit. This was just one of those hits that just happened to be egregious the way that it looked, the fact that, you know, there may or may not have been helmet to helmet contact, so I get it. But this is such a blip on James Harrison's story. This new news, the Masakwa hit, will be a big part of his history because of the fact that, like, he even pointed out in that Instagram post, you know, that NFL.com was selling the picture. You could buy that as a still and frame it in your house on the greatest hit CD of the 2000s or 2010s or whatever. And, you know, it was being celebrated and whatnot on the TV afterwards until he got slapped with that fine. The fine will be there because it's such a hefty fine for one play in a game. But this news right here is nothing. Again, it's nothing. And you look at his entire legacy in Pittsburgh. I think about the interception return. I think about the Chiefs sack in the AFC divisional game where he dips around Eric Fisher. And, you know, that was such a big thing when he gets the holding call, and all Chiefs fans are saying how, you know, it's, you know, a nonsense call. You know, I think of plays like that. I think of those sacks he had, you know, in 2008, whenever he was, you know, defensive player of the year. Those are the things I think of when I think of James Harrison. I'm not going to think about this little soundbite that lasts less than 50 seconds of an
yeah,
is now going to dictate all this, especially when we all know in our heart of hearts, the NFL may or may not even have this on their radar. They may just look at it and, you know, put it in the save for later file. Tomlin's not going to say anything. The Rooneys already made their peace with it, that they had no, this was never a thing. His agent saying the thing. Harrison's came out and explained for, why is this still being sprung by people as like a big time thing? You know, we're looking at this big bad James Harrison that's, you know, spinning all this stuff and stirring the pot again. Why can't just ride off into the sunset? It's, everyone's going to have an opinion on it. In my opinion, just the fact that this is not a big deal. It's really not. This doesn't change my opinion of James Harrison. You know, a lot of times when it comes to athletes, I look at what they do on the field and what they do off the field is two different things. You know, you can choose to not like a prospect because of what they do off the field. I more than agree with that. You know, a player does, you know, gets charged with domestic assault, DUIs, whatever, things like that. You can look at that and make your opinions as such. But opening your mouth and criticizing your team after you retire, I don't think is a good enough reason to sit there and say, oh, man, you're a POS. I don't want to have you anymore. And, you know, who cares what you did, and the fact that you're a big part of why you brought home the 6th Lombardi to Pittsburgh, you know, whatever.
Well,
thing.
I think I have to read off James Harrison's rebuttal here too. You know, probably the best thing for the tail end of this, because there's only so much you or I are going to say just to give a different light on this, other than somebody else just coming out and being like, "Oh yeah, well I got an envelope with, you know, 5 G's in it or whatever." But anyways, Harrison says, "Wow, y'all, that disappoints me. I understand he was born in Akron, he went to Kent State." Come on, man. You haven't been around Pittsburgh long enough to say yins. Wow, y'all really – nobody says y'all in Ohio. This still bothers me. I'm sorry. And, I lived – born and raised in Ohio myself, and my mom speaks yinzer, fluent yinzer. It's something that comes – we're like 10 minutes from the Pennsylvania state line. So – or you know what? I meant to say this the other show. I think you said PA, and I don't think some people – especially, you know, we get some people that are international listeners too. Those are the two initials, the postal letters for Pennsylvania, the abbreviation. And the only people who say PA are people that are from that area. You know what I mean? I don't think that's common knowledge to a lot of people. I don't know if anybody says TX for Texas or anything like that. So anyways, wow. Y'all really comparing what I said to Bounty Gate? Mike T has, capital letters, never paid me for hurting someone, or capital letters, trying to hurt someone or put a bounty on, and caps once again, anybody. If you knew the full story of what happened back then, you would know that BS fine for illegal play wasn't even penalized during the game. The league was getting pressure because the first concussion lawsuits were starting, and they had to look like they cared about player safety all of a sudden. Before that, they had been selling a photo of that same play for $55, all in caps, on the NFL website, with other videos of the NFL's greatest hits in caps that the league profited on back then. When the league had to start pretending like they cared about player safety, they took all those things down off their website, and they started finding guys ridiculous amounts for the same plays they used to profit off of. Everybody knew it. Even these same media people and all the fans that were sending money to me and the team to cover the fine. In caps, again, at no time. Got to be said one more time. Again, at no time did Mike T ever suggest anybody hurt anybody or that they'd be rewarded for anything like that. GTFOH with that BS. Get the F out of here with that BS. And liked by a one Mike Mitchell. Also, this is off of the James Harrison's official Instagram. That's pretty funny that Mike Mitchell liked that. Of course, Mike Mitchell put in that same situation. And what's even better is James Harrison has screen captures of when these were sold in the NFL photo store and things of that nature, the DVDs. And he also calls out, he has this article. It was probably came from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, because it was from Ed Bouchette from back in 2010, and says, according to Ed, the Rooney's relationship with Roger Goodell is still pretty good, but it must be strained after Art Rooney spoke out against the $75,000 fine the league hit James Harrison with. To even further complicate things, Ed said that Dean Rooney is hot about all this, in quotes, and he is sure that Rooney has called him any number of times to address all these fines. So just goes to show you, he had the support of many people back then, and there wasn't just this dirty underground, you know, whatever bounty thing going on. So Sean Payton could stick it, you know what I mean? And I highly doubt it would be unlike Sean Payton to stick up for one of his players or slide somebody any type of cash to pay for a bill or anything like that. You know what I mean? As a friend thing, this isn't like another thing too, where some people are like, well, players get this within their contract or anything like that. It's like, that's why it sounds more shady, because you just can't give somebody an extra $1 million on the side. That's like some college football stuff. You know what I mean? It's a big no-no where, you know, they can't get any money until they figure out what their likeness and that. That's a whole new thing that's coming. But you know, you just can't be like, well, here, Tom Brady, come to the Buccaneers, and your contract's only for $1.5 million, but wink, wink, I got a briefcase full of $6 million here on the side I could just hand you. So, you know, the other part of this is, you know, it's like $75,000. Holy crap. And it ends up being only $50,000. did James Harrison give $25,000 back to Mike Tomlin? You owe him some money because it got reduced. And then somebody else is like, well, you could just put a check in an envelope. And it's like, well, then there would be a paper trail of it. You know what I mean? Who knows? Maybe he PayPal'd it to him. I don't think you could Venmo back then. So it's just the whole thing just seems so preposterous. I'm glad it gave us something to talk about at least. You know, that's kind of fun. But at the same time, it just draws my ire that I'll give ESPN some credit. At least their little article here didn't seem very clicky or very much. They had most of the facts just spelled out with a few quotes, dates, and details of things that happened and nothing more, no further opinion or speculation on it, which makes me feel good. You see some of the other people who immediately jump to their blogs and start writing about this, and you just kind of, you know, roll your eyes at whatever. And that's when you get people like Mark Madden to call you out on it. So, you know, any other thoughts, Zach? I mean, you know, it's just, I just think it's like a brotherhood. Like, would this story be the same if it were Ben, Big Ben, the most G thing Ben did was he gave me an envelope, you know, slid me an envelope after that game or whatever. There's the other part. James Harrison doesn't say it's like, I think I said this earlier, but immediately after the game, that could have been like Tuesday or Wednesday during the week when they finally get back in the facility and they break everything down. So it just drives me crazy and I'm ready to be done with talking about it.
Yeah, no, I am too. Like I said, I was really at a loss for words when this entire thing came out because of the fact that I had no idea why it was getting blown up the way that it was. And, you know, there's fans from other fan bases that are going to use this as just another straw in the cap to, you know, say why the Steelers are a fraudulent organization, why they get away with everything and blah, blah, blah. And again, I really get annoyed with that talk because every team in the league, as far as I'm concerned, and it's a little side here. I was going to put this out on Twitter recently. I just thought better against it. I've never understood the ideology of bashing other fan bases for who they like. If you take out who they support on their team, we're all the same exact type of people. It just depends on where we live and what team we support. And somehow that turns into this big affliction to give an excuse to bash other people. I see it all the time on Twitter, and I don't get it. Secondly, every team, you know, there's the notion that some teams get away with more, some teams get away with less. And, you know, I understand how that might be evident or might be apparent. A lot of that just gets based on how much the media decides to make it into a story of it, as far as I'm concerned. You know, the league, I believe, and, you know, maybe I'm just naive, I truly believe the league goes and conducts the same type of due process for every team, no matter what it is. And they get the punishments as is. And whether or not that's, you know, seems fair, whether or not, you know, there's some level of inconsistency with what the punishments end up being, especially from, you know, Roger Goodell's office, I still think that the notion that this was just another reason that the Steelers are a fraudulent, dirty organization is mind-blowing to me. But you're going to hear it. You're going to see it on Twitter because that's how people are and that's how fans operate. The Steelers, this was a thing 10 years ago, and now it's going to get drudged back up because all of a sudden now the Steelers are back again to being a dirty organization for what they did 10 years ago on a hit, as if there aren't big hits every single week of the NFL season that are realistically warranted of fines. James Harrison has had a history of big hits that had led to fine or discipline or whatever. And, you know, to sit there and say he's the same type of player as Avantes Perfect is just, come on. You're just wasting your time. This is not a story. It is, only reason it's a story is because enough media people have written an article about it with some very catchy title to get you to click on it and read it. And if anything, TMZ is profiting from all the tweets and things like that have been put back to their website.
And Barstool, too.
It's TMZ. So, I'm not putting any credence on there. My opinion of James Harrison doesn't change. You know, my good luck jersey is still my James Harrison Pro Bowl jersey. That's still my go-to good luck jersey whenever I feel the Steelers need some superstition from yours truly. And that's not going to change because of comments like this. If a player wants to come out and talk poorly about the team after they leave, why should I get upset about that? It has no bearing on my life. That's his opinion. He's going to say what he wants to say. Unless a player comes out and blows the doors off of some monstrous underground thing that no one knows about that's been going on for a team for years, it's his prerogative to say he had an issue with the coach or he had an issue with the team or an issue with players or whatever. You know, we're not there to witness those things, so why should I get all up in arms about it? If he wants to sit there and, you know, sling whatever at the wall of the Pittsburgh Steelers, that's his prerogative. And it's your prerogative to either take what he's saying and take it literally, or, you know, just take it with a grain of salt and keep scrolling through your Twitter feed or, you know, your ESPN feed or whatever. It's not worth going and, you know, flipping out over nonstop, and just move on, enjoy yourself, look forward to whatever season that we may have, whatever that might look like. Just enjoy it and roll with it. You know?
Yeah, totally agree, man. Well, I mean, we're up against it, blue in the face, whatever we could even say about the rest of this. So, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I ain't got nothing else. It's just, it's stupid. I banged my head against the desk on this, and that's precisely why we've been talking about it. So, Zach, hey, thanks for joining me once again today, my friend, and look forward to doing it again here in the near future, maybe without, like, some garbage like this to talk about. I don't know. AB gave us a lot last year, so thank you, AB. I was going to say to you, too, you were saying about TMZ. I wonder how many more listens Barstool's episode's going to get, not only this one, but now maybe they'll pick up some subscribers and stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's pretty strike while the iron's hot. But thanks for joining me again, man.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, Joe.
Yep, and same here. And folks, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. And until next time, my name's Joe. His name's Zach. Don't go sliding envelopes to anybody, please, please. Oh, also, be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.